As an unlicensed doctor, we suggest a prescription for one of our shows. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Fake Doctor's Orders. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
Today on Tim and Sid, the Leafs hypnotized the Devils for most of last night.
I think I see what you're doing here. The Golden Knights' Big Papa is out as Gerard Gallant is shockingly fired.
And the notorious Conor McGregor tells us his next four fights. I'm serious. Next four fights, right?
I can neither confirm nor deny that's what's going to happen on today's show, Tim.
But it's going to happen on today's show.
Hey, kick in the door.
Wave in the... Never mind.
Never mind. No. No.
We don't wave anything.
No.
Except hands.
Hashtag Tim and Sid. Of course, I go by the name of the kid. Famous. Wow. This here is the Tim and Sid Show. You are now tuned in. Coast to coast. Entertaining the masses. Sports entertainment. Yeah. It's about to get started. Sit back. Enjoy the show. In 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Let's go.
All you heard was Papa Don't Hit Me No More.
Rock and Roll Hall of Famer, the Notorious B.I.G. Big and small.
There are some...
Congratulations. Whitney Houston?
Who's the
rock
class?
And roll legend Whitney Houston?
But it's been the... trying to think of another word than the phrase that popped into my head. But the door has already been kicked in.
Oh, there's a...
Tribe Called Quest is in,
there's
right?
All kinds.
Like hip-hop has been...
Genres.
Yeah.
Hip-hop's late to the party.
In the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame now for a while.
Nine Inch Nails announced they're getting in today. Doobie Brothers. How's the Doobie Brothers not in? Depeche Mode? How's Depeche Mode not in the Rock and
Doobie
Roll
Brothers
Hall of Fame?
What's a good Doobie Brothers song?
Run in the music. Run in the music. You don't like the Doobie Brothers?
Whoa.
If you've been to any...
Is that what you're
saying? If you've been in any grocery store ever... Yeah. You've heard a lot of the Doobie Brothers.
I'm asking you, I'm probably, like, every time we talk about music, I say, I don't really know, and then you sing the song, and then I know.
Well, I'm not the Doobie Brothers, so you're not getting the best version of that.
No, but Listen to the Music is the name of the song.
Yeah.
Oh, Listen to the Music there.
See,
you know, I get the Doobie Brothers mixed up with the Allman Brothers.
You love you some Allman Brothers.
Yeah, some Ramblin' Man.
Whipping Post?
That's the Allman Brothers.
But they had a lot of deep tracks. So you got to go deep on the Allman Brothers,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Kind of Grateful Dead-ish, the Allman Brothers.
Don't get me started on the Grateful Dead. Are you kidding me?
Overrated band.
Name me three Grateful Dead songs.
Right, there's a bunch of people who...
That doesn't include Touch of Grey. Name me three.
How many live shows do you go to a year?
I've been to 9 Grateful Dead shows. I have no idea what I watched.
Yeah. And same with Fish.
No, nope.
Like, some people just hate Fish, but then you go to talk to the people who love Fish, and they're like, "Oh, Fish is amazing."
I'm Portuguese.
You gotta go watch them live.
I can't say I hate Fish.
In Portuguese, people can't say
it's blasphemy
that they hate Fish.
I can't just say that.
Understood.
That is the history of music. It's Wednesday, January 15th. I'm Sid Sixero. He's Tim McCall.
We should just do a whole show.
Grateful Dead is overrated.
On our version of...
We could.
Music.
This is Tim and Sid. Twitter is how you can get a hold of us anytime. At Tim and Sid is how you can do that. Tim and Sid Instagram and Facebook accounts are also operational and a lot of fun.
Our podcast is available 24/7. You can also stream the show on any device. Courtesy of Sportsnet now. Just download the Sportsnet app. For more information, Sid and I often disagree on what is best to consume Sportsnet now or any sports on device. I say, grab your iPod, get it done. He said, I don't need anything but my phone.
I'm good with my phone.
Good with my phone. Coming up over the next 2 hours, what we hope is entertainment, we will discuss Gerard Gallant.
Gone.
Alex Cora.
Gone.
Rasmus Sandin.
Arrived.
Josh Donaldson.
Arrived in Minnesota.
Conor McGregor.
Has arrived in Vegas. That is right, kids. The notorious one, Conor McGregor, will step back into the octagon this Saturday at UFC 246.
Notorious.
He is set to take on Donald Cowboy Cerrone.
Mm-hmm.
I thought you were going to hit me with another one. I like
Cowboy?
It.
Cowboy?
No, notorious.
I'm a rhinestone cowboy.
It'll mark the first time.
You didn't like the...
I like the Notorious way better.
All right.
It'll mark the first time we've seen Conor in a sanctioned bout, not at a bar, since October of 2018.
Guy's got to fight back for it to be a fight.
No, I'm just saying.
The anticipation surrounding his return, as you might expect, enormous. So when we were asked after last night's show, if Sid and I would stick around to interview Conor McGregor from Las Vegas, we said, yes, please. The Tim and Sid Conor McGregor interview will come your way at 6 p.m. Eastern time in about an hour. We talk about his struggles outside. I mean, we waited a long time because we were told it was going to be around 9:30 Eastern time. It ended up being around 11:10 Eastern time.
We're here for you, kids. We just know that.
I'm not complaining.
No, he's not, but know that. We're here for you.
However, it was a late night last night. He talked about his struggles outside the ring, what he's learned from it. We also tried to dig a little and find out what the next big money fight could be for Conor McGregor.
I want to pitch this to you. I'm going to give you three names. Of the three names, I want you to tell me who you are most likely to fight sometime over the next 12 months. So here are the names. Okay. Khabib, Floyd Mayweather, Manny Pacquiao. Hmm. Who of those three are you most likely to fight in the next 12 months?
Jeez, I tell you what, that is a tough question.
Tease. That's a tease right there. We cut him off at tough question. Let me just say this. He actually said one of the fights has already been put in front of him in the response.
It's a double tease, McCall. That's a double tease right there.
I was trying to make the tease a little better. I have brought out the blanket for the third song, laid it on the ground, and we're about to tease everybody right here, Six-Zero. I don't know if you know what I'm talking about. And if you don't know what I'm talking about,
ladies and gentlemen, cinnamon.
From McGregor's next three fights to the Leafs' last three games, all losses, at least heading into last night. In some circles, the panic button was already being pushed. But hold up. Leafs snapped the three-game losing streak with a 7-4 win over the Devils. Auston Matthews picked up his amazingly just second career hat trick and first since his NHL debut when he jumped on the scene crispy and clean. Sid, should last night's performance ease the mind of Leaf fans everywhere?
Well, Devils are one of the worst teams in hockey. The Leafs kind of mailed it in the second period and gave up a bunch of goals late. All's right with the world. It's amazing what you hear from a fan base after a game where you prove nothing. You prove absolutely nothing in any way, shape, or form. That game, listen, I hope a lot of people watch on Sportsnet Ontario, helps out everyone's salary. But don't tell me I can pull anything away from that game last night. Absolutely anything. It was a night where you're supposed to pick up 2 points. You picked up 2 points on the Flames tomorrow night. It'll be a different game, that I guarantee you. But any Leaf fan spiking a football today, get over yourself. Have you lost your mind? The Devils roll into town? They have no identity? And you give up, P.K. Subban had 6 shots last night. You still played zero defense? You gave up 3 goals in the third period to make it interesting? Just what was learned from last night? And I'm leaving out Rasmus Sandin purposely. I'm leaving him out. But does someone tell me what we learned last night from the Toronto Maple Leafs against a bad hockey team that you're supposed to beat? Aside from that, it was a good night for the Leafs, I thought.
You conveniently left out that they beat two of the best teams in the league coming in.
The Devils.
In Washington, the Devils.
Both were
Washington
flukes.
And Tampa.
Both were flukes.
Okay. All right.
Everyone knows this.
You know that Leaf, what you can take is that Auston Matthews is a really good goal scorer.
Yeah, the tip from Marner.
The deaf deflection.
It's just so much more difficult than it appears, right?
2 goals back at Pasternak for the league lead. He's now on pace for 59 goals this season. Crazy, too. The empty netter. Did you know this? Just the second empty net goal of Auston Matthews' career?
Come on.
So of his 145 goals in the show, only two of them have been empty netters.
You know what that tells me? Boy, Mike Babcock didn't trust him to be on the ice late.
That's correct. That is correct.
That is like,
and that's why Zach Hyman has 120 empty net goals.
And I don't want to besmirch the name of Zach Hyman, who I genuinely like.
Yeah, because he works his ass off.
But if that doesn't tell you everything you need to know about the Babcock Matthews situation at times, I don't know what will. Guy should have 30 empty netters.
Instant trivia for you, Sid Sixero, and those listening and watching. the last Toronto Maple Leaf to win a goal-scoring title was?
Strictly goals.
Goal-scoring title. You could call it Rocket Richard, but it's only been Rocket Richard for a little while.
Ken Jennings on this one. Last Maple Leaf to lead the league in goals in a season.
Any guesses from the room? Daryl Sittler from Dagan.
Daryl Sittler is a fine guess. I don't think it was Sittler. I think it's an, and it's also an awful guess, Dagan, but thank you for playing.
It is incorrect, Daryl Sittler. Would you like to play the game, Sid Sixera?
I think it has...
Sebastien Morin, I know you're a Habs fan. Would you like to play the game?
I think it's a guy from the 30s who has like a nickname that a guy from the 30s would have. Like... Tim Babe McAuliffe or something like that. You know what I mean?
You're pretty damn close.
I'm not kidding. Like, I think it's one of those guys.
1945-46, Gay Stewart was the last Toronto Maple Leaf.
1946.
1945-46, during the war, just back from the war, Gay Stewart was the last Leaf to win a goal-scoring title, and Austin Matthews is now two goals back of David Pastrnak.
So the late 40s was the last time the Toronto Maple Leafs had the leading goal scorer in the NHL. Boy, that's some scouting down through the years. Eh? That is, boy, hey. The Toronto Maple Leafs have just led the charge on looking at guys and say, you know what? I got a guy who I guarantee you won't lead the league in scoring. Let's take him.
All right,
the story of the Leafs, right? I think Tim McAuliffe may sum up the Leafs in a one-line stat. That is one of the craziest things I have ever heard in my life for a team that makes this much money for not winning right. a playoff series, let alone a Stanley Cup. This is unbelievable how this team is loved to this point that has given back so little to its fan base decade after decade. Well, after the 60s. After the 60s. Decade after decade after decade. Since the late 40s, you can't land on a fluke of a pick. Since the late 40s, you can't stumble ass backwards drunk into a player that could lead the National Hockey League in goals. By the way, Tim, the most important thing in hockey?
Goals.
Goals!
Yeah, that's correct.
And the Leafs have never had a guy since the late 40s when basically they invented electricity that is good enough to lead the National Hockey League, and every scout from the late 40s to now has stolen money from the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Do you believe?
Stolen money from every owner of that team, good, bad, or indifferent.
Do you believe they invented electricity in the 40s?
I'll go on Google. Okay. I have to double check.
All right. And I'm glad you mentioned the 60s because Dave Keon was probably the best player on planet Earth, but he didn't score a lot of goals.
And they won some cups. I'll give the 60s some slack for this one. Right.
Understood. But don't worry. Scouting system has been corrected. Rasmus Sandin had two primary assists, and all is solved on the Leafs' back end.
That's Rasmus Sandin texting you right now.
What's he trying to say to me?
He's saying, damn right.
Feel like those stories were written in the first period because it seemed like the same old Leafs late in that game. But Rasmus Sandin did look okay in the game. And I know that some people wanted to make it feel like Sandin's return to the Leafs lineup was as good as Sidney Crosby's return to the lineup. But not here, Botch. We're not going to do that today, okay?
No.
We'll just tell them that Rasmus Sandin looked okay. And that's one game, and you want to build on it, and playing 16 minutes is pretty good for a 19-year-old kid, right? Like, just don't start writing the Norris Trophy winning, right?
I saw a bit of it, though, Timmy.
I saw
a bit of it.
I didn't even want to walk down the road.
Saw a bit of it, heard a bit of it.
I know, but you also heard it about Thomas Caberle, so take it easy, all right? That's the city, right?
Don't listen. Stop banging on my twin brother, Thomas.
Oh, yeah. Right? He's still in the city, isn't he?
He's still in the city, yeah. He goes to games. Like myself, he's put on 20 pounds.
20?
At least.
I'm not talking about Thomas. I'm talking about you.
Look,
listen.
Good night for Rasmus Sandin to echo what you just said to me.
Yeah.
Everyone relax.
This guy, so funny.
This guy is going to get dummied consistently because he's not big, and he better give you that offense or he's not going to help you because defensively is not his game. He's an offensive player.
Yeah.
And you're hoping he can cope.
And you got a bunch of those guys already on your team. And I wonder if Cody Ceci becomes the guy. If Sandin plays well, I would be worried if I were Cody Ceci. That's a story for another day. I mentioned Sidney Crosby. This is what's not fair. I didn't even want to bring up Sandin, Sid, because I heard all the same things that you heard, which was, oh, well, there you go.
Well, we were sitting,
problem solved.
We were sitting here last night waiting for Connor. I know we heard the same things. Yeah.
Right? Like the problem solve talk. Like, take it easy. One game. He played well.
I was shocked.
I wanted to come out here and say he played well. And then I heard everyone else talking about how awesome he was. And I was like, that's why defensemen get run out of here so quickly. That's why defensemen get run out of Canada so quickly. Because you build them up and then you tear them down. And they never should have been built up to start.
Kids, do yourself a favor. Just breathe on Rasmus Sandin.
Yes.
He had a good World Juniors. He's deserved the call-up, especially
now.
I'm not saying he hasn't deserved it. Remember how he wasn't ready not that long ago. Okay? Just remember that.
I don't even care about that.
Come back and talk to me in a week.
I don't even care about that. You evolve. He might,
lots of defensemen evolve.
Yeah. He might be getting better.
Don't tell me he's arrived. Don't tell me he's arrived, because then you're borderline insulting.
All right, Sid's return was unreal. We don't have to sugarcoat that. I don't have to be afraid that a bunch of people are writing some sort of column on how he's going to be the next Hart Trophy winner, because he's already got Hart Trophies to his credit. 4 points and a ridiculous assist on Brian Rust's goal. Worth mentioning, because the Rust thing was ridiculous, right?
Well, so much for Rust versus Rest. When you get some rest, you find Rust. Sidney Crosby is the second best player in the world. I don't think there's any doubt about that. It is stunning how you can have that much time off, 28 games, and still like murder people's faces. I don't know how he does it. A tip of the cap.
Because he's one of the best players in the world.
And one of the best of all time. So, you know, maybe if the Leafs in the 40s found a guy like that, they wouldn't have that stat that you read earlier.
That is correct.
You know what I mean?
Your boy Gay Stewart.
You know, the Leafs need to find a... You know what? The Leafs should draft a Sidney Crosby one day. Maybe that'll help.
Won the lottery, Sixero. Our good friend Brian Burke. He'll be here tomorrow.
The Penguins way. Dare me to say the Penguins way to Brian Burke.
Does anyone remember
what? Rip my face up. We're gonna text Brian later and ask if we can pull that clip at the press conference where someone asked him, Do you think you should follow the Penguins model? And Brian lost his mind and said, they won a damn lottery. I think there was a GD in there.
Right.
I want to get permission from Brian, and maybe we could run
it. They won a lottery that got them lottery. Sidney Crosby.
They
thanks, Sherlock. Way to unlock that pad.
We need Sherlock to unlock what the hell happened today with the Vegas Golden Knights.
Here we go.
Surprising doesn't begin to describe it today in the NHL. The Golden Knights, who I will remind you are in year 3 of their existence, fired head coach Gerard Gallant. After their loss to the Sabres last night, their fourth straight, it left Vegas a point out of a playoff spot. They are technically tied with the Jets for the last wild card in the West. Gallant was the only head coach in team history. Again, team history is not that long.
Mm-hmm.
And led them to the Stanley Cup final in year one.
Year one.
Just 2 seasons ago.
And
should have been in the second round last year.
Right.
Pete DeBoro, recently fired by the Sharks and hated by all Golden Knights fan base, was brought in to replace him, believe it or not.
Right.
Gallant becomes the 7th head coach to lose their job this season already. Tim, are NHL teams jumping the gun / panicking a little too much?
All right, maybe 7's a misnomer, but it's not much lower than that. Guys losing their job because of, and I quote, entirely performance-based when it comes to Gerard Gallant. Here's the deal. We told you last year that when St. Louis won the Stanley Cup, it was the worst thing for coaches everywhere and the best thing for GMs and owners everywhere, because everyone thinks they can get rid of their coach on an underachieving team like Craig Berube went in for Mike Yeo and change everything around. But what people don't mention when they talk about Craig Berube, and with all due respect, to Berube, who's done a wonderful job. His arrival coincided with the arrival of Jordan Binnington, who is what? The best goaltender on planet Earth over the last year?
Last 12 months, you can make the argument. Yeah.
Last 12 months, probably the best goaltender on planet Earth. What people leave out of that when they're attempting to make that argument of the positive is that Mike Yeo, who was fired by the Blues, was the 3rd head coach in November to be fired that season in the National Hockey League. John Stevens by the Kings went before him. Joel Quenneville by the Blackhawks went before him. You know what happened to the Kings and the Blackhawks last year? They missed the playoffs. You know what's probably going to happen to the Blackhawks this year? They're going to miss the playoffs. And the Kings are missing the playoffs. You can't just point to the 1 or 2 times that it worked. Berube, Sullivan in Pittsburgh, Sutter before them, all finding a pretty damn good goalie, Matt Murray, Jonathan Quick, Jordan Binnington, and say it works. It doesn't always work, and what you had was a good man and a good coach, fired in Vegas because they weren't living up to expectations and are still in a division that they could take the lead with two wins.
Not living up to expectations. You are an expansion team. You should be eating dog food every night. Not living up to expectations. This is a joke, Timmy.
Well, you know the roster is better than what they have done thus far.
But they're still in it.
Yeah.
What's the panic?
They're 3 points out of first in the Pacific.
Kelly McCrimmon was supposed to be the smart one. What just happened here? You're in year three as an expansion team. Ingrates. And you want more than being in a playoff race. How dare Gerard Gallant keep you in a playoff race as a third-year expansion team in the National Hockey League? Max Pacioretty signs long-term. Mark Stone signs long-term. They love that guy. Gallant is beloved by the players, the fan base, who figured out what hockey was 18 minutes ago. I don't know how this is going to go over.
It's not going over well.
This makes zero sense. Kelly McCrimmon better know what he's doing as the GM. George McPhee, he knew what he was doing. And no one wanted to lose this guy to another franchise. All right, we'll see. Let's see how that plays out now. This is bizarre at every turn. And, Tim, I'm going to say something. I don't have anything to back it up, but I'm a cynic at heart. And I got a thing in the back of my head. I got a voice that won't go away. Peter Laviolette gets fired.
Mm-hmm.
They're in the playoffs every year. They're having a down year, but he's in the playoffs every year.
Yeah.
This happens today with Gerard Gallant. We've seen coaches leave under other circumstances this season in the National Hockey League, and quite frankly, leave the National Hockey League looking really, really badly. This is all performance-based, right?
That's what we're being told.
We're being told. There's not another person on earth who is wondering if things are being hidden. Am I the only one wondering that?
Whoa.
This makes no sense. And I'm not accusing anyone of anything. But this has been a very strange year in the National Hockey League. Sat here for a week and talked about Bill Peters.
Gary Lawless, who knows the team pretty well.
Yes, he does.
Tweeted out, it's a shame to have to say this because Gerard Gallant is such a good person, full of respect and humility. But for those asking, this was entirely performance-based.
And I don't like asking. And thank you for reading that. I don't like asking.
I realize that Vegas has lost four straight and aren't playing up to expectations, but for the love of all things Hock and Lube, the guy took an expansion team to the Stanley Cup final
madness.
In their first year, won the Jack Adams 2018, and man, does his termination history suck. You'll remember he was fired by the Panthers at a similarly head-scratching time, left on the curb in Raleigh, North Carolina, looking for his own cab to get him away from the cameras. Literally, yellow cab to get away from the cameras. This time, he's fired a couple of weeks before he's set to coach the Pacific All-Star team and replaced by a guy he once called a clown.
Pete DeBoro.
Correct.
Called him a clown during the first round series a year ago.
So when does Seattle hire Gerard Gallant?
Hopefully soon. Hear, Timmy. We're going to step aside. Coming up, Gerard Gallant is not the only guy who lost his job in the last 24 hours in professional sports. The Red Sox are needing a manager right now.
Yeah.
Which we kind of knew might happen, but the Red Sox pulled the trigger early yesterday. We're going to talk about that. NBA Raptors talk coming up. And oh yeah, a conversation with Conor McGregor, who is stepping back into the octagon Saturday night in Las Vegas. Tim and I will
Notorious.
Have a conversation with him.
No, Notorious.
That's what I want.
Yeah, it's a podcast, but we're still not going to let him swear. Subscribe to Tim and Sid at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan, on demand.
All right, that's better than mine. A reminder, our interview with the Notorious One, Conor McGregor, coming up on today's show. Always a very entertaining guy, as we found out before the interview even began last night. We take you behind the scenes. Conor McGregor sits down with us, and here's the conversation. As we warming him up here? Is that what
you could call it a warm-up, correct?
Yeah. Just where we say hello and welcome to the show, and we're going to get started in a second. Here's how it went.
Flashback.
How's Toronto? I hope Toronto's doing good.
It's never been the same since you and Floyd left it.
That was fun.
Yes, what a spectacle that was. You know, the Toronto Raptors had such an amazing basketball season, right? I was watching that closely with Drake, a friend of mine, Drake, and I'm sure you know well, Drizzy. But that was an amazing time for the city, right? I was watching that very closely. It was crazy to see the amount of support that the basketball team had by the place. So, very cool.
You even brought up the parade.
I know. Thank Raptors correspondent Connor McGregor will join us a little later on. Again, that wasn't even the interview. We'll play you the interview coming up here at 6
Eastern.
He
sat down in a pretty good mood, and I think you can see that in the interview.
He was in a good space. Alex Cora isn't.
No.
Let's go to baseball, Timmy. He was fired by the Boston Red Sox last night. This is before his punishment from MLB will officially come down.
Yeah, but we know.
Based on all the technically stealing signs thing. He joins A.J. Hinch in unemployment due to the Astros sign-stealing scandal.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think Cora, Timmy, and Hinch will get another shot at managing? Do you think one is more done than the other? Where do you go with that?
They should. Let's not get carried away in this moment. If guys who do PEDs stay on their team and only get a half a season, then I think the punishment is fitting the crime here. Like, I think 1 year suspension for both of these guys and losing their job is enough of a deterrent, is enough of a punishment. I don't know that they'll get another job, but the way I look at it is part of what happened here was how brazen they were, right? Major League Baseball catches the Red Sox in 2017, slaps them on the wrist, but tells everybody, listen, we're not doing this anymore, okay?
Just be careful.
Don't do this. Be careful. 2018, they rewrote the rule. 2019, they adjusted the rule again, saying, okay, we get that there are people still doing it. Stop doing it each time. 3 times, Major League Baseball was on record with this very same rule. And it became, to me, almost schoolyard. The Astros were so brazen with this. They were like, bleep you. We don't care what you say. And Rob Manfred stared him in the eye a couple of times and said, what? And then he said, bleep you. Rob Manfred said, what? And finally, the third bleep you, he looks back and goes, bleep me. Nah, bleep you. 1 year for all y'all. Get the hell out.
And well, we don't know about Cora yet.
He's at least a year, right?
He's probably getting 2.
He might get 2.
Yeah.
So if he gets 2 for being the mastermind, why are we sitting here with players who willingly got involved in the program and cheated the game as well?
Because I think it's tougher to discipline them.
Of course it is, because just the PA is there.
Do you know how many appeals would be filed? Like, this thing would last for years, man.
But that's not what you're supposed to do as the commissioner of baseball. What you're supposed to do as the commissioner of baseball is punish people. This is the same thing we had with PEDs.
Well, I disagree. I think the commissioner of baseball's responsibility here is to send a message. That's his responsibility.
So those guys get, if you are correct, 2 years, a year, and a year, and the players benefiting from it, team benefited as well, but the players benefiting from it.
Yeah, players absolutely did.
And participating in it get 0?
I'm not saying I like it. I'm saying I understand it. Because these are the fights you can win. You can take care of A.J. Hinch.
That's not what I'm asking you.
You can take care of Jeff Lindell.
I know that these are fights that you can win, and I know that PA will get in the way. What I'm saying is it's soft as the commissioner to go after the fights that you can win and let the fights that you should win lay by the wayside.
So you don't think taking care of people whose responsibility it is to oversee everything is ducking the issue? Because I don't think that's ducking the issue at all.
I don't think it's...
I think going after like a Tony Kemp or whoever the hell was involved at the time for the Astros, that's being soft. Really? You're going to go after Tony Kemp? Really?
What if it's George Springer?
What if it's Jose Altuve?
What if it's some of the best players in the game?
Yeah. What if it's... Maybe he's protecting some of those names, right?
Well, that's what happened with the PEDs. And then everyone looked back and said, how did this happen? And I'm saying in the moment,
right,
why don't you punish the players? I'm saying you're being soft.
I don't know how soft you're being when some of the best executives and managers in the game are losing their careers.
Nobody like
that's
Jeff
tough,
Luno.
Man. No, but he still was a guy who has a World Series ring.
So let me ask you a question. You think they're losing their careers? Are they going to get another job in this league?
I think Luno and I think Cora are done, and I think A.J. Hinch will work again.
So Alex Cora, one of the more well-liked guys, in all of baseball is not going to get a job anymore because he cheated. But the guys who cheated with him don't get any punishment whatsoever. That's You're okay with that?
I'm not okay with it, but I understand it. I know what you're asking me.
Well, but I wasn't asking you if you understand
it. But I understand it.
Because we both understand it.
I do.
They don't want to pick a fight with the PA.
I don't love it. Look, he interviewed 23 guys in that Astros report. Who knows where they are now? So you're going to punish the Oakland Athletics if they have a guy on their roster? They didn't do anything. No, you're going to punish the Mets?
You punish the player.
But you're punishing the team as well. You're punishing a different team. So that makes things complicated.
If a guy gets pinched for steroids, he sits for 80 games.
Correct.
Doesn't matter what team he's on.
But it's a cheating. But if a PED issue is you are injecting that into your body. You don't have to tell a manager. You don't have to tell a coach. You don't have to tell a GM. You do that yourself. This thing was coordinated.
Right.
And if other teams aren't coordinating but have someone on their roster who gets bit, why should they suffer for that? I get that aspect. Again, I want to stress, Timmy, I don't love it. I want to bust all of them. But I get it.
Donaldson to the Twins, Josh, his first name. 4 years, $92 million. Good deal?
For a 34-year-old who's had injuries not that long ago, it's an excellent deal for him. I don't think he wanted to go there. This offer reportedly was on his desk for a month. I think he would have easily taken the Nationals or the Braves if they put another year on the table. But I think it's a great deal for a guy who kind of got screwed in a couple years of free agency. I'm happy for Josh.
Second highest contract ever given out to someone his age. The only one that beat him, Kevin Brown. 7 years, $105 million in 1998 at the age of 34. Worked out for a couple of years for Brown. Meanwhile, in basketball, Toronto Raptors welcome Mark Gasol back to the court tonight in Oklahoma City. As the Raptors continue to get closer to full health, the return of Gasol also opens up the debate on who should start. Mark Gasol or Serge Ibaka?
Mark Gasol, Serge Ibaka, back together again.
Good! Mark Gasol!
Mark Gasol is a guy who, you look at those numbers, they're not going to blow you away. But if you watch him play, you know the impact that he has.
Back door, here you go! Gasol with eyes in the back of his head!
When you got those two big horses, Leo, I mean, they can rebound, they control the paint.
Attacking, a ball! Slam dunk! Serge Ibaka, beast mode!
I just love the way Ibaka's playing.
Denied by Serge!
Got to think twice before you're going to go in there.
There is slam by Mafuzi Chef, cooking it up!
And that's the maturity of being a champion.
Nice to hear Sam Mitchell's voice back on the show.
I like Sam.
Remember that?
I like Sam.
There's no denying Ibaka has been great in Gasol's absence. 13 games since Gasol went down. Ibaka averaging 18 points, 10 rebounds, while shooting 54% from the floor. On the season, Ibaka's stats are much better than Gasol's. And more than a few fans have pointed out the numbers over the last couple of days. Gasol only averaged 6.6 points per game in 27 before going down injured. So, Sid, the question in Raptors Nation, who should start?
There's no question who should start. Marc Gasol. Marc Gasol, you can argue, is the most important Raptor. I'm not even kidding. Marc Gasol has a vision on the court that not a lot of guys have on that roster. It's like having a coach on the court, in the paint, dictating defenses.
Normally, you only say that about point guards.
Correct. It is odd for an older Spanish center to be a guy with that kind of vision. But, Tim, when you look at the record of the Raptors with a lot of these guys missing, they have above 500 records with all of these guys missing except for one dude, and it's Marc Gasol. 6-6 without him.
Mm-hmm.
Now, still, it's not bad, right? 6-6. But every other guy...
Winning record.
Had a winning record. So they missed him, but they didn't miss him like that. Marc Gasol, you see it in the numbers. With Serge Ibaka, who has 8 straight games with a double-double, on the bench, that's one of the best bench units potentially in the league if he gets going and other guys come with him.
Right.
And Patrick McCaw becomes a guy. So I say Gasol, he starts immediately. That's his role. Put Serge to the bench. I don't think there's a lot of debate in it, although I understand the debate.
Gasol's impact is proof that stats are like Nicki Minaj videos. They show a lot, but they don't show everything. Like, the Raptors are proof that smart basketball players doing their job with smart basketball coaches can play above the level of their talent, right?
Correct.
Like, Raptor fans not understanding that to this point need to log on to figureitout.com. Here are the numbers. Gasol on the court the Raptors have the third best net rating as a team. So only two guys are better on the court offensively and defensively by the numbers. Gasol off the court, 15th best net rating for the team. He makes the team better when he is on the floor, and Ibaka's numbers aren't even close to Gasol's numbers. Bring him off the bench, Sidney. You are bang on. Okay, what about this Rabonis Shelburne column?
Yeah, let's hit on this before.
And moreover, a tweet that caused ripples in Raptors Nation earlier today. And it read as follows. Paul George called to congratulate Kawhi Leonard on winning a championship. And then it took on a life of its own. After countless text messages, phone calls, and two meetings at Drake's house, they were both home in L.A. Here's why that meant so much. And it's a column that Rabonis Shelburne writes in talking to Paul George. Bad optics on the fact that they met at Drake's house in L.A. or much ado about nothing?
No, this is not nothing. I'm sorry. Like, there's a lot of people trying to sweep this under a rug today. If you're a Raptor fan, and I just tell you, by the way, when Kawhi was orchestrating all of that and leaving the Raptors after a championship, it was at Drake's place. So chew on that for 30 seconds.
What if you just...
I get Raptor fans going, really?
But what if...
Really?
What if Drake, like, what if I just said to you, Sid, are you going to Scarborough? And you say, yeah, I'm going to Scarborough. And I go, oh, you're staying in a hotel? Like, what are you doing? Mm. And you go, nah, I got it, you know, paying $500 a night for a hotel. I go, hey, here's the keys to my house. Stay.
As you're trying to woo me.
You're good to go.
You're technically still wooing me, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's July 1st.
You know what? You can stay in my place.
Yeah.
And then you go in there, and you meet with somebody, and you double-cross me in some way, shape, or form.
Double-cross. Very good double-cross, right?
Am I to be liable for that?
No, but I think... I got to be honest. Drake needs to kind of tweet something. Like, I don't think Drake knew what was going on. But the fact is, it still happened on Drake property. And it's weird. So just, like, send out a tweet saying, look, I didn't know what was going on. I didn't know what was going on. Because there's no way he knew what was going on and condoned it.
Yeah.
All okay, I'm saying is, as a guy okay. who is that right, tied going, yeah, to yeah. the Raptors,
okay,
to
good.
A fan base out there, you just, maybe it's time for a tweet, is all I'm saying. Mea culpa, I didn't know. That's all I'm saying.
Well, there's no mea culpa. I let a guy stay in my house.
Some fans think there's a mea culpa. So maybe send out a tweet and smooth it out. I think it might be a good
time. We'll ask Kendrick Perkins. See what he has to say about it. He's been good tweeting of late.
The always conservative Kendrick Perkins.
He's been good at tweeting as late. And coming up, Conor McGregor will join us here on Tim and Sid to discuss Donald Cerrone and his next three fights. Coming up on Tim and Sid.
With the whole schedule laid out for it.
This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
Still to come on a pretty good guest-driven show today on Tim and Sid TV and radio. Conor McGregor will join us. We've got a tweet in at Tim and Sid from Anthony that says, Notorious, don't dare even think about having Drake with you for this fight. The curse is real, mate. Is the Drake curse lifted with the Toronto Raptors, the team that he is the global ambassador for?
Well, and I thought the Sixers...
Winning the national championship?
Didn't the Sixers game reverse the curse?
I guess it would just be an NBA championship.
Like, wasn't he rooting for the Sixers? He had Sixers socks on or something like that?
What?
On the Kawhi game. He had socks. He posted it.
Oh, he wore the Sixers shorts.
He wore, like,
shorts.
Sixers socks to reverse the curse.
I was so distracted by Sixero picking the Sixers in Game 7.
See, I think I had...
Reversing
more,
the curse.
I had more of a hand in that than Drake.
Than Drake. Although, when you think about what transpired in L.A. at his house...
Oh... I don't know why I love this story as much
you
as I do.
I think it's ridiculous.
You cut to the core of me, Mikal. Kendrick Perkins, does he love it as much as I do? Kendrick Perkins joining us here on Tim and Sid. Perk, how you doing, man?
What's up, fellas? Tim, Sid, how y'all doing, man?
We're good.
Let me ask you something.
Hold on. Is Perk Is Perk an MMA guy?
Oh, yeah. First off, yeah, you're going to watch Conor this weekend? You an MMA dude?
I am. I love MMA and I love boxing, so I'm going to watch both of them. I'm going to watch. I'm going to check out Conor, see what he going to do this weekend, see if he go, you know, bounce back and if he got his mind right. You know what I mean?
We're talking to him later, and it sounds like he's got his mind right.
Yeah, it definitely sounds like he has his mind
focused.
Right. All right, Kendrick. If Kawhi Leonard and Paul George plot the Raptors' demise at Drake's house in California,
not demise,
is Drake responsible for that?
Absolutely. He's the middleman. Like, why are you doing it at your house? And Drake, what type of loyalty do you have to the Raptors? Like, what are you doing?
Well, but what if it was just like Airbnb? Like, they just stayed there.
Yeah. Like, what if he, like, they're still wooing Kawhi, technically, right? But what if he doesn't know? What if he's ignorant to Paul George's presence? Does that change the situation in your mind?
No, it should never happen. Drake, if anything, it should have been something where Paul George was getting traded to Toronto and Kawhi Leonard was staying. Drake, come on, man. Golly.
That might have happened, too.
That might have happened too.
We were talking about Raptors big men earlier, and Serge Ibaka, while starting in the presence of Marc Gasol, who was out with injury, has put up some pretty good numbers. And I know you know both these guys well, but we were talking about the presence and the impact that Gasol has beyond points and rebounds. Is there a way to describe to fans what Marc Gasol can do to a defense and an offense, even when he's not scoring or not yanking down 15 rebounds a game?
So, Tim, see, you have different type of people in this world when you talk about basketball people, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have your typical fans who just want to look at the box scores, and then you have your student of the games, like, you know, you guys and myself who actually know guys' worth. And to me, to answer that question, When Gasol won Defensive Player of the Year in Memphis, that just speaks volumes of his value to anyone. Because think about this. That year, it's not like he led the league in block shots. It's not like he led the league in steals or led the league in rebounding to win Defensive Player. No, it was when he guarded guys, how he guarded pick and rolls. Those type of little intangibles is what won him Defensive Player of the Year. And, you know, when Marc Gasol's presence is on the court, it's invaluable. The things, his IQ, the way he's able to pass the ball, you know, certain times, you know, how he's able to draw fouls and how he's able to play without fouling, you know, verticality, those things, like making guys miss shots. You don't necessarily have to. Sometimes blocking the shot is not always a good thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, because the team still pretty much get the possession. Sometimes the way Marc Gasol defends, I would take that over a great shot blocker any day.
Yeah, a guy who swats it out of bounds or takes himself out of his block out or his man, you know, the help defense comes over. I'm with you on this one. I got to ask you, we rep for our own here in Canada, and this kid, Shea Gilgeous-Alexander, is doing some damage. How good can he be?
Well, you're talking about a guy like, and I did this on my Twitter earlier today. I went back and redid the draft of 2018, and it was hard because obviously I took Luka number one, but it was a debate who I was going to take for the number two pick out of Shea Alexander and Trae Young. And listen, let me tell you the difference between the two. The difference between the two is Shea Alexander is a guy. You know how those old people used to tell you, hey, man, that kid right there, he just got an old soul. Mm-hmm. That's how Shea Alexander play. He plays like a 10-year seasoned vet that got game. I never seen a guy this young with that much poise. Like, he's so poised and under control, and it's just scary. And he's a great combo guard, plays on both ends of the floor. Now, back to what I was saying. If you're a typical fan that tunes in every blue moon and you like the game of basketball and that's your number one sport, and you know you're talking about box office and shoe sales and what sells tickets, and you just want to go to the game to see excitement, then you'll take Trae Young. But if you're a student of the game and you actually watch this game and you watch these players and you know what they bring to the table, obviously, you know, Shea is going to put up that 20 a night. But the other things that he brings to the table and, you know, the winning plays that he makes, then you're going to take Shea Alexander. So I that's just how high I speak of this kid, man. I think he's a all-star for the years to come. NBA all, you know, I think he's going to be on the NBA all-NBA team for the years to come. And to be honest, he's scratching that surface right now. Because OKC got to get one player in the All-Star, in my opinion. Like, nobody expected them to be where they are today except for yours truly, me. I picked them to make the playoffs because of this roster. And it's either out of Shea and Chris Paul. One of those guys getting the All-Star game this year. They have to.
Perk, we have no time, and I don't mean to pry, but are you and KD good?
I mean, it is what it is. You, whatever you seen on Twitter, that's why our conversation ended right there. So, you know, whether we good or not, on my end, I'm always good. I'm going to be the same person. KD been knowing me for years, so that's where we at with that conversation.
So there's no phone call?
Nah, ain't no phone call. Not right. From me.
Okay, fair enough. You are always good when you were with us, sir.
Yeah, we'll call you anytime if you let us.
Hey, my line is always open. Listen. You guys will never be on my block list.
Thank God for that.
Appreciate that.
Thank God for that.
Thanks, Kendrick.
Thanks, Perk.
All right, fellas. Have a good one.
There is Kendrick Perkins in Houston, Texas, part of our doubleheader on Sportsnet 1 tonight.
Yeah.
Rockets, Blazers. Hearing he likes the Rockets tonight.
And that we're not in his bleep list is a good thing, too. Always a good thing.
Block list. Coming up, kids. We weren't on his bleep list, although it was dicey for a few moments last night as we waited for Conor McGregor. But he showed up, we did an interview, and I think it's pretty interesting. So stick around for it next.
Yeah, it's a podcast, but we're still not going to let him swear. Subscribe to Tim and Sid at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan, on demand.
Time for Tim and Sid. It's time for real sports talk with Tim McAuliffe and Sid Sexero.
Muchas gracias, sheepdogs. Tim and Sid back with you for another full hour, all platforms today as we take you up to Hockey Central 7 Eastern on Sportsnet, ahead of the Blackhawks and the Habs on Scotiabank Wednesday night. Hockey. Elliot Friedman will join us a little later this hour. You're going to want to stick around for this. What the hell happened in Las Vegas?
Great question, Tim. I have no idea.
Gerard Gallant out, Peter DeBoer in, if you missed the news.
Vegas, my God. But we begin this hour with one of the bigger guests out there right now, dare I say, Tim McAuliffe.
Mm-hmm. Another Vegas guy.
Conor McGregor, speaking of, returns to the Octagon in Vegas this weekend. UFC 246 against the winningest fighter in the history of the UFC,
yeah.
Donald Cowboy Cerrone. We had a chance to talk to Conor McGregor last night from Vegas. Before we get to that, let's remind you why he is one of the most entertaining / polarizing athletes on planet Earth.
Maybe I should run for president of the United States.
Sonny Omlea, I just don't give up.
Three elephants died making this ivory custom-made suit.
What are you doing with a school bag on stage? You can't even read.
He better be prepared to die, because I will be prepared to kill.
Started from the ball.
UFC 246, McGregor Cerrone, this Saturday in Las Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
We are now joined by the one and only Conor McGregor from Las Vegas. Conor, welcome to Tim and Sid. It is great to talk to you. It's been a while since we've seen you in the ring. Things have gotten a little boring. It's actually glad that you're back, or I'm glad that you're back.
yes.
Are we going to?
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Are we? How different a Conor are we going to see this Saturday in the octagon compared to the last time we saw you when you fought Khabib?
Oh, you know, you're going to see a much more focused, a much more committed individual. I've put in immense work for this camp. I've recognized what I needed to do, what I shouldn't be doing, and I've followed my instruction, you know, and went full steam ahead with it. The camp has been flawless. Everything is good. The energy is high. I'm on weight. I'm actually underweight right now. So I'm very excited to go in and showcase my skills and remind everyone who created this game and who founded this game, you know. So I'm very, very excited to be back.
I keep hearing the more focused, and I also keep hearing the more happier Conor McGregor heading into 246. Would you agree with the happier part? And do you know why it is?
Yeah, most certainly. You know, you when you tell yourself that you've got to do something and you follow that, it's like a mini victory, right? You know, and that's been happening to me a lot. I've recognized what I needed to do and I've done it. I've executed it. And it's just given me these victories and it's given me this want to be in the gym and want to put in the work and want to do all the things that surround the fight business. And it's just made me more happier to be involved in it, you know. So I kind of switched off before. Now I'm most certainly switched on. I'm very, very excited.
Conor, I'm a huge fan of reading quotes because I'm not smart enough to know on my own. And one of my favorite quotes as I get older is, in youth we learn, in age we understand. 2019, maybe even 2018, weren't the greatest years for you. Do you have any regrets the way things have gone down over the last couple of years?
Of course, certain things went ways that would have been better to go other ways, right? But, you know, I'm not dwelling on the past or those specific moments. For me, they were phenomenal learning years. They were certainly phenomenal revenue years, you know. So I learned a lot. I still stayed above ground, and I'm utilizing these lessons in 2020, you know, the year of perfect vision. So I feel everything happens for a reason. We must go to certain places in our life to truly understand and to truly learn. And that quote that you understand with age is very, very true. I feel very much that I understand my surroundings, what I need, what I must do, and I'm doing them.
Nice.
You mentioned I stayed above ground. The level of fame, Conor. And don't get me wrong, you're still fairly famous. But the level of fame that you had a couple of years ago, describe that for us. What is that like?
Fame is a wild animal, right? It's a wild animal that's hard to get a hold of. So it comes with its pros and its cons, like many things, you know. But again, we're just trying to focus on the pros. I feel I'm a lot more accustomed to being everything scrutinized and certain things can run away, and you know, but look, fame is just a part of this game, and it's not what I got in this game for. I got in this game for the love of competition, for the love of fighting, and for the love of securing my family's future, and that's where I'm at right now, and the fame is just a necessary part of it, and it is what it is.
Let's talk about that love of the game, Conor, because here in Canada, we often talk about GSP and how his career ended and how the door never really closed. You've got enough money. Why keep fighting? Why stay in this world where you are the hunted man?
I got buy and sell George St. Pierre. That's what I'm sure. Hell, George. Although I like George. He's not a bad guy. I mean, if he's flirting with it, he should just go and do it. You know, coming back and hearing this and that. And the other, the belt got taken off. The belt he used to hold got taken off and gave to someone else. And he should come back and do it. I think so. But yeah, I'm in a great spot. I've done very well for myself. I've created avenues and revenue streams outside of the fight game. You know, it's a very difficult thing to do it's the most difficult thing to do, not just in the fight game, but in any athletic endeavor. You know, it's hard to create revenue streams outside the game. Usually when you retire or you're done. Me, I've kind of secured myself outside of that already. And now I still have that athletic fire in me. And, you know, I'm just 31 years of age. A lot of prime left in me and a lot of desire and a lot of lofty goals, you know. I'm moving up in weight, of course. This was unheard of. Before I moved up and won that second world title at 155 pounds, not one fighter in the game would float through the divisions like I have. So, you know, I take risks. I want to aspire to do great things, and moving up again to 170 there's many more. It opens many more options for me. There's a lot of great things happening in the welterweight division at present. I'm also still open to the boxing venture. You know, I'd love to win a boxing world title. I've recently brought back on my old boxing coaches, which in reality was a grave error on my behalf not to bring my original boxing coaches in for the Mayweather camp. But all in all, we done well. But now I'm back with my team, and a boxing world title is another lofty goal of mine, and another goal that I will achieve. And that's it. We set goals. We work hard, and we strive to achieve.
Connor, let's go down that road here, and I don't want to discredit Cowboy Cerrone, who is one of the best in the business, yep. and it's going to be an entertaining fight this weekend. But I want to pitch this to you. I'm going to give you three names. Of the three names, I want you to tell me who you are most likely to fight sometime over the next 12 months. So here are the names. Okay. Khabib, Floyd Mayweather, Manny Pacquiao. Hmm. Who of those three are you most likely to fight in the next 12 months?
Jeez, I tell you what, that is a tough question. You know, right, this I'm starting this year like a season, right? Fighting is not necessarily like a, you know, regular sports, basketball, football, they have their season. Fighting is not really like that. But for me, I am approaching this year like a season. So I want consecutive bouts and activity. It's what allowed me to rise up and achieve what I have achieved in the sport. And it allowed me to be at the sharpest of my abilities, and that's what led me to win that second world title in New York that time. So that's what I'm looking for. So I could very well fight all three. There has been an offer on the table for the Manny Pacquiao fight. The Floyd fight is always being flirted with, and the Khabib rematch is inevitable. You know, we are looking for that to take place in Moscow. I want that bout to take place in Moscow. I think, for me, all I can just see is Rocky Balboa. You know what I mean? That's what that reminds me of, and I just want to create that for the fans and for the people, and it must take place. So I could very well fight all three of them this year. I could have maybe another four fights this year on top of this one.
Wow. I don't want to glaze over the comment you just made about fighting all three, but the comment you made about fighting Khabib in Moscow, you're not kidding, are you? Do you feel safe in that environment?
I love Moscow very dearly. I went out there. You know, he tried to say, you're not welcome in Moscow. What did I do? I went over there straight away through a big press conference and then bang in the heart of Moscow. It's a phenomenal place. There are good people out there. They support me very well. I've got a good fan base out there. You know, Khabib is from a certain part of Russia in Dagestan. It's isolated, and I have my people out there, and it would be a phenomenal bout, and a bout that must take place, and it will take place.
Would the lead up of that potential bout, forgive me, Tim.
No, sorry,
would the lead up of that potential bout be much different? And I think you know where I'm going with this, much different than the initial lead up a few years back with Khabib.
You know, I would certainly focus more on the skills, like I am. You know, I'm focused on my inner thoughts, my internal dialogue, and I'm keeping that strong and keeping my focus. So I would be focused on that, and I would be committed. You know, that's basically it. You know, I just was not committed. I was committed inside the gym. When I was in the gym, I would work hard, but outside the gym, no, I would drift off, and that is not the life of a top athlete and a top fighter. So, I would correct those and focus on myself and my team, and make it right. So,
I love the focus.
Although, would it still get personally? You know, it's a personal war between myself and that man. So, I make no promises that it would be that much different, but I would certainly be in much better condition for a bout.
I love the new focus, Conor McGregor. I love the happy Conor McGregor. I wonder if you've allowed yourself to wonder what you want to be when it's all said and done. Have you ever allowed yourself to kind of walk down that road and what you want your legacy to be?
You know, I suppose I just want to be known. I'd like to be known as a man who took risks, you know, who defied the odds, went against the grain, and done things that were never done before. I have many firsts in my career, and done things that have never been done before, and I'm very proud of that. Maybe also an educator, you know. I've showed the world how to do it, and I've also showed the world maybe how not to do it, you know. And then I've also showed the world how to do it again after showing them how not to do it. So. We're just going around and around, I suppose, but I'm very proud of my achievements, and I have many more achievements that I aspire to achieve.
To quote Irish sports fans, some of the best on earth, there's only one Conor McGregor. And he just joined us here on Tim and Sid.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that. You're dead right. The Irish fans are phenomenal support. And I know there's many Irish out in Toronto. I had an amazing time there. I was there twice, actually. I was there once for the Jose Aldo build-up. We've done a press conference out there. Blew me away, that because I had not known at that time that there were so many Irish people out there. So I was very taken back by that. And then obviously the Mayweather spectacle, which was a wild affair. And we had a great time. I love Toronto dearly. I'm good friends with Drake. I'm in constant contact with Drake. He's a phenomenal man. I look forward to hopefully coming out to Toronto soon. And thank you so much for the support.
Next time we have a parade, you're invited.
One more thing. Yes, excellent. Thank you so much. Also, one more thing. The song, There's Only One, Conor McGregor. Well, now there's actually two. The song should be There's Only Two, Conor McGregor. Because my son, Conor McGregor Jr., he's following up behind me. So I may have the fans change that song. But thank you for the support, sir. I appreciate it.
Again, that was our conversation with Conor McGregor. It happened last night after we went off the air. He joined
us. We said you're welcome after that.
Yeah, we did. We weren't rude. We just didn't leave. Good point, Tim. Thanks for jumping in.
I want to make sure.
It's valid.
Think we were rude to Conor McGregor after he's talking about his son.
A couple things, and we've kind of alluded to it as we pull back the curtain on how these things sometimes work in our business.
Mm-hmm.
Conor McGregor was in a room where he did about 30 interviews last night.
Yeah.
And sometimes when a guy like that gets to you in what they call the car wash, he's in a mood, or he's tired, or he got asked a question where he's kind of pissed off after the fact. These things happen. He was ready to go. He was in a pretty good place, I found. Mm-hmm. And in the lead up to this bout, where we've seen him really angry in other lead ups to other bouts, obviously, I got a different sense from him.
But don't you think that he's kind of had to do that?
I think so.
Like the last two years have not been kind to that man.
No.
And it's hard to humble maybe the cockiest athlete that we have ever seen. I mean, Floyd Mayweather and him just basically had an ego off going in to build a fight that they were going to have.
There was a lot of offs in the build-up to that.
Yeah, there were.
Yeah.
There were a lot of offs. But I think that his experience, and listen, we're not here to sugarcoat anything that he's done and or has been the allegations that have been lobbied against him, or the video that we saw where he punched an old man sitting in a bar. Like, he knows that he bleeped up. And I think what you're seeing now is what he had to come back as. And that was humble Conor McGregor. He told Ariel Helwani that he hasn't had a drink in 4 months.
Yeah, and there's an insinuation in that.
Yeah.
And he said, and he mentioned it to us, I mean, the lead up to the Khabib Nurmagomedov fight, he wasn't clean going into that fight from a drinking standpoint. It was not what you would normally do in a fight week or in the month leading up to a bout of that size. We're gonna see the other side of that, I think, this week. That's why the Cerrone fight this week on a pay-per-view is interesting, because he's not going into it like that. He's not the wild man,
right?
Where everything around him, from a partying standpoint and from a PR standpoint, from showing up late to every press conference, it's not really happening in this lead-up. It's about the fight. And when it's about the fight in the past, this guy has been an absolute animal.
Mm-hmm.
And he won two titles in two different divisions doing it that way.
Right.
We'll see which guy is still there.
Right. And make no mistake, and I don't think that he's a flawed man.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of us are flawed men. In fact, we're all human. We make mistakes, some bigger than others, obviously. But what I thought we saw there was a guy trying to say, I'm trying to turn the page.
I think so.
And be a different man.
I think so.
And maybe being a dad has helped him turn that page.
It sometimes helps a lot of people, too. I wouldn't know, but it sometimes helps a lot of people.
All right, we'll take the break. Your reaction on our conversation with the Notorious and still Elliot Friedman on what the heck happened with the Las Vegas Golden Knights.
Notorious. That is a great question, McAuliffe.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. No medical exam or health questions will be asked. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
This is Tim and Sid, coast to coast to coast on Sportsnet. For the full 2 hours today, Sportsnet 360 and Sportsnet 590 The Fan. For those of you who missed our interview with Conor McGregor, you can catch it online. In fact, we just tweeted it out at Tim and Sid. Michael Conner didn't miss it and said, Conor McGregor sounds like the one who won the match who won match after match years ago, Cerrone should be very worried. Do you need me to read that over again?
Let's take two on that. I understand.
Live television, kids.
Coming down in 3, 2, 1.
Conor McGregor sounds like the one who won match after match years ago. Cerrone should be very worried.
Acting!
Nailed it, Six Sarah.
Well done, McAuliffe.
Smooth.
Well done, McAuliffe.
Like sandpaper.
Like proper 12 whiskey.
Did he sound like that to you? Are you buying that? Are you buying the I'm humbled from Conor McGregor?
I believe he's humbled. How that translates into the ring against a guy who's won more matches than any other guy in the history of the UFC Saturday night? Mm-hmm. I don't know. Donald Cowboy Cerrone stayed busy. He's been very successful over the last little stretch. I mean, Conor's not the only one who's had a kid recently and it's changed his life.
Mm-hmm.
Cowboy Cerrone's kind of in the same boat. I'm not willing to say this isn't going to be Cowboy's night because I got a lot of respect for Cerrone.
Jay writes in and says, watch tons of McGregor interviews this week already. Hands down, Tim and Sid, one of the best ones so far. Original questions and good conversation. Hate hearing journalists ask him the same question over and over. Hashtag UFC 246. I'll just take it, read it, because I like people who like me.
Thank you for the compliment, and I agree with you.
Torben, that's the best conversation I've heard with McGregor.
Wow, that's kind words.
The best conversation I've ever heard.
Ever heard.
With McGregor.
In life.
I'll take that one as well. And you can't please everybody. Aaron writes in and says, it's obvious Tim and Sid don't know anything about the fight game. They mentioned Manny Pacquiao as one of his next opponents instead of Jorge Masvidal.
Tim, you want to take this one or you want me to take it?
Are you going to get mad?
Yes.
Okay, I'm going to take it then.
So please take.
When we asked him about Manny Pacquiao, what did he say?
He said something along the lines of,
there's an offer already on the table to fight Pacquiao.
Yes.
Listen.
Well, what are you no, I'm not going to do it.
I get the Masvidal question, right? You want to know if he'll fight him.
I want to see him fight Masvidal as well. Who wouldn't? If you're a fight fan, that's a fight you want to see.
You asked three guys that people have been talking about for years, and the most juicy possibilities out there for a guy who is an MMA fighter, right?
Correct.
You asked him two boxers.
After he said, I'm not done with boxing.
And after he Remember. Said that a championship boxing belt
yeah.
is in his future. Yeah. Like, there are people out there, and I don't care whether you believe this or not, there are very smart, sweet science, fight game, boxing fanatics who say that Floyd Mayweather simply toyed with Conor McGregor in order to carry him for a few rounds and give the fans a little bit of excitement and a little bit of value for their dollar.
I heard another reason why that fight went as long as it did. Did you hear this reason?
You haven't told me yet, so
it's hard for
me.
Good point. Well played, McAuliffe.
Hard for me to know if I know.
Floyd and his people were seen at various
establishments?
Sports betting areas of Vegas right. hours before the fight.
Right.
Laying down specific round bets.
Mm-hmm. I do remember that story.
I vividly remember that story.
But hold on.
Go ahead, because I want to revisit this.
The guy who said that he didn't feel like he trained well enough for boxing, the guy who said he wants to have a belt in boxing, I feel it's a relevant question to ask him about Manny Pacquiao, who has offered him a fight, put something on the table for him, and a rematch with Mayweather. As well as Khabib, because we all know, we want to see Masvidal. But you know, if he fought Khabib again, they would set a record for all-time pay-per-view buys.
You put any of the three guys we talked about in that interview with him, that every one of those fight possibilities can set up a pay-per-view record. And it's quite a hill to climb at this point,
mm-hmm.
after what Mayweather did. But I think you could easily sell it. So, yes, as I agree with Tim McAuliffe on the relevance of all the names put forward, I would be excited for all of them, Masvidal included.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we asked the question for a reason, is the point you're trying to make.
The one other part of this equation that I would love to get to, and I don't think we have the time to do it. In this lead up to this fight, in fact, I'll just give credit to Ariel Helwani because I love him and he does a wonderful job.
Just for no reason, do it because he's great.
And he talked to Conor McGregor for about 40 minutes. Conor McGregor said that he made $80 million for the fight against Khabib and estimates he'll make around $50 million for this fight against Cowboy Cerrone. One of the beefs that I've had with the UFC dating back to our first interview with Dana White on a podcast down at the Score Television Network, I don't know, what, 10 years ago now?
Longer than that.
Was it, well,
I think it was longer than that. Was it
longer than that? Was you pay your top guys, but you don't pay them the way boxing pays them. Lo and behold, Conor McGregor goes to the boxing game, gets a paycheck,
yep.
And now is telling Ariel Helwani that he made more than every other UFC fighter ever made. You could probably combine the totals made by every other UFC fighter, and it wouldn't equal the $80 million Conor McGregor said that he made for the fight against Khabib. Is that not mind-blowing?
It is. So are you suggesting that's not good for the sport, or that's good for the sport?
I'm suggesting that the UFC had to change their model and start actually paying their fighters because of what Conor McGregor did.
Well, at some point, someone was going that mainstream. I love George St. Pierre. Love him. He was never that mainstream. He was mainstream-ish, but not like Conor was 2, 3, 4 years ago. Not even close. Conor McGregor became a cultural icon to some people.
Mm-hmm.
George was one of the greatest MMA fighters ever, who was a nice dude who was quiet.
Right.
Still made some money. Didn't make $80 million for a fight. Didn't make $50 million for a fight.
Put up million dollars.
Insanity.
Put up million buy pay-per-views.
But didn't get paid like that.
Nope. And I told you at the time, the one argument I had was someone's going to do their own fight. Someone will promote their own fight and step away from the UFC, step away from Dana White. Conor didn't even have to do that.
Conor brought Dana with him because Dana knew what it was going to be.
That's unbelievable.
That's changing the game.
Jeff Azzopardi, who books guests for this show, said in a tweet, "I just wanted to say today could be the toughest Tim and Sid guest lineup ever, with both Conor McGregor and Kendrick Perkins checking in. But Friege of Hockey Night in Canada, Elliot Friedman, is also scheduled to be on, so never mind."
Listen, someone in this room may have been put in a rear naked choke by Elliot Friedman once. Don't denounce Friege's toughness.
That wasn't me. He did it to you?
I'll tell you in the break.
Was it really naked, though?
I was a...
Yeah, it's a podcast, but we're still not going to let him swear. Subscribe to Tim and Sid at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan, on demand.
Welcome back to Tim and Sid, both TV and radio. The Montreal Canadiens will look for their third straight win tonight when they host the Blackhawks on Scotiabank. Wednesday night hockey coverage on Sportsnet begins with Hockey Central at 7 p.m. Eastern. Not far from now, Elliot Friedman will be a big part of tonight's panel. And you can read his 31 thoughts. Call him on sportsnet.ca. He joins us now for 3 of those 31 thoughts, brought to you by the next generation GMC Sierra Denali with the world's first available 6-function multi-pro tailgate. Friege, welcome back to the show.
Good to be here.
What the hell's going on in Vegas?
Good question, Tim.
That's a great question. I mean, we're all shocked by this today. I don't know anybody who wasn't surprised, except for maybe the people who made the decision. The thing that's the most amazing thing about it, too, was I'd heard some rumblings that they were working on a contract extension for the man that you see there, Gerard Gallant, and I was actually going to look into it for this week's headlines. Good thing I didn't report it last week. Yeah. I would have looked really dumb. But, you know, I'd heard rumors that they were looking at extending him. And I just guessed in the last few days it changed. They looked at the way they were going. They didn't like where they were going, and they decided to make a move. And, you know, I think that year, 2018, it was such a magical year. It was one of the greatest years I've ever had the pleasure of covering in hockey, watching Vegas go to the Stanley Cup Final and getting to be a small part of watching that run. But maybe it just raised the expectations to an unrealistic place, because I don't think by any real measure, you could look at this and say this is a coach who deserved to be fired. That's twice now that, you know, Gerard Gallant has been in situations with really bizarre changes.
Fried, you mentioned the run a couple of years ago, and I'm not saying Gary Bettman would meddle either way, but considering the feeling in that market and how new it is and how successful it has been, there's no way the commissioner's office is happy with seeing this today, considering how the market, as young as it is from a hockey sense, could react to it. Is that a concern at all from the league standpoint?
I don't think so. I mean, I can't see the commissioner getting involved in something like this. I mean, he might be as surprised as everybody else is. I wouldn't have thought to even ask him, but I can't see. I mean, that market is a huge success. And those fans, those are good fans. And the league is very lucky to have them. I can't see him having any particular reason. As you know, if the team wins, all of this gets forgotten.
Are you surprised it's Pete DeBoer that replaces him, especially given the history between the two teams?
No, because number one, I think if you're going to replace Gerard Gallant, you better have a good coach. And I think Peter DeBoer is a good coach. And number two, I think people are generally mercenaries. So if a job comes open and it pays, I don't know how many people are going to turn it down.
I don't know what you're talking about, Fridge. I have no idea. So then how long, the next question is, do you think, I mean, this has been unbelievable to see coaches getting fired and then picking up a new gig. I mean, Gerard Gallant, that's a great name if you're out there looking for a coach.
Well, if you take a look at it, I think both Peter DeBoer and John Hines were unemployed for less than 40 days. And I think, you know, we're at seven coaches fired this year, although two of them for very different reasons. And the record is 11 for one season. And I think one of the reasons that we're seeing changes is that people are looking out there and seeing some of the names out there and saying, well, if I'm going to make a change, I better be able to improve my lot. And all of a sudden, there's coaches out there and you're saying either I'm comfortable with them or I really like what they've done. And I do think that adds to the churn. Like, absolutely, you know, Gallant's going to be unemployed as long as he wants to be unemployed. And Peter Laviolette's a guy whose history is to turn teams around, too. So I could see coaches in current spots saying, I'm not thrilled that guy's out there.
Peter Laviolette is also out there.
Yep.
Mike Babcock is also out there.
Mm-hmm.
Who's the guy of those big names that gets the next gig, do you think?
Probably Gallant if he wants it.
Yeah.
You know, he might need to take time. You know, one of the teams that almost hired Gallant was Dallas a few years ago, but they're going really well right now under Rick Bowness. You know, they're really improving. They're competing. They're doing really well. They got a good win against Colorado last night. Do you change anything like that? I don't know if that's a really smart idea. You know, the other guy who's got a long history with Gallant is Steve Yzerman. But, you know, again, I don't profess to know what Steve Yzerman's thinking. I don't think he's going to offer too many clues. But the one thing everybody knows is, you know, if there's a coaching change there, that's a big job. And that's a job where there's not going to be winning anytime soon. So you know that you're going in there, in a situation where you better be able to handle the stress of not immediate results. And I don't know if Gerard Gallant's wired for that.
If you're Seattle.
Yeah, I think he'd be on the list too.
But you talk about walking through a grocery store on a shopping spree here and taking a pick of what you want. There's no way they expected to have some of these names available that are currently available.
Never mind a guy that went through what they're going to go through.
Exactly.
Absolutely. I agree with you on that. No question about it. And Ron Francis said that he might wait for another year to hire his head coach, but he did reserve the right to say, you know what, if someone comes available who we like, we'll do it. And, you know, I mean, you never know. We'll find out how he feels about some of these guys.
Good point. Over the last little while, Elliot Friedman, who is joining us from the Hockey Night in Canada studios in downtown Toronto, we've been talking about the Toronto Maple Leafs, their injuries on the back end. We were talking about the Montreal Canadiens and how they face the future with all of their injuries and some of the age and the key positions that they have. From what you're hearing, who's more likely to make a deal first, the Habs or the Leafs?
It's a good question. I can't really say much about, like, the Canadians have decided they're going to meet next week and start to go over some of their stuff.
There's a trade right there. No, Elliot Friedman on the phone. There is a tweet and an email.
No, I don't think
so. A text and an email. All right, fine.
The Canadians are going to wait till next week. You see, the thing for the Maple Leafs is You know, if Rowley's coming back during the year, you've got to account for his salary, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you can't just go out and add some big number unless you know you're not getting, unless you know you're not getting Rowley back until the end of the season or the playoffs. So that makes their situation more difficult. I think with Montreal, it's going to come down to, are we still in the race? Are we making it appear as if so and we're chasing as if we're still in it? Or are we going to see what we can get for some of our players? And I think it's always easier to make that decision first. So if I had to, it's not based on any information, as is usual when I talk. But, you know, if I had to make a pick, I'd probably say Montreal, although I don't base that on any confident prediction.
Well, can you explain the Morgan Rielly situation as you did to me yesterday when I called you and asked you what would happen if Morgan Rielly was out the rest of the year? Could they use that money? And when you get to the playoffs, there's no salary cap in the NHL, right?
Okay, so here's basically what you have to know. Imagine that I'm the general manager of a team that is at the salary cap, okay? And Tim, you get injured in a game, and Sid gets injured in a game playing for me. Now, I know this situation is already really far-fetched.
Correct. I play hard, though. I can see that.
Yeah, you do play hard. I have no doubt about that. So let's just say, let's make it easy. Sid, you're making $5 million. Tim, you're making $5 million. So all of a sudden, even though I'm right at the cap, I've got $10 million of cap room. I go out and I trade for Taylor Hall, who's making $6 million this year, okay? Well, what if you guys come back before the end of the regular season, all of a sudden I've added $6 million and I've got $10 million coming back. So how do I make room for all that? However, if both of you guys are out until the playoffs, there's no salary cap in the playoffs, I can add Taylor Hall and then I can bring you both back when the playoffs start. And the team that did that to the best advantage was Chicago when they won the Stanley Cup in 2015. Patrick Kane was injured against Florida. They kept him out. They went out and they got Antoine Vermette with cap room they didn't have. They just didn't bring back Kane until game one of the postseason. And if I could do the same thing, I would do it too.
But the fact that...
Does that make sense?
No, yeah, definitely. Definitely.
So they could just stash... If Morgan Rielly agreed to it and you think you can get away with it, you could... Go out and get a $5 million
defenseman. And you can make it look not contrived.
Right. And
well, the thing is, if he's legitimately injured and he's legitimately not coming back till right before the start of the playoffs, no, I mean, people will scream bloody murder, but as long as it's a legit injury, nobody can do anything about it.
But the fact that we're even bringing this up as an example of what a team may or may not be able to do, like, that tells me the Leafs are in some trouble. Like, the fact that we've even gone down this road from an injury standpoint, from a cap standpoint, right? There's no other way to really read that, right, Fridge?
Well, it's just that they've had years of pretty good health, and now it's all catching up to them. And in some ways, it's actually really helped them this year because they have the flexibility to potentially make moves that they didn't think they were going to have. You know, when you're in long-term injury, like they've been all year, you can't bank cap space. It's a squeeze. But because of these injuries, they have the possibility of at least considering some other things. You have to make sure you're aware of where you are when all these guys get back, but it has given them a bit of flexibility they didn't expect. I mean, the biggest difference, though, is that they haven't had a healthy team all year, and that affects everything you do.
And the crazy part of it is, I mean, if you take out LTIR, there are 14 teams with under $1 million in caps. It's not just the Leafs.
No, it's tight this year. I mean, and that's because last year the league predicted the cap would go up by a certain number and it was less. And teams didn't find out until right before free agency began on July 1st. And, you know, that's why they're trying to do a better job of making a deal with the Players Association in terms of where the cap's going to be next year for earlier. And it's possible they may set it for more than 1 year. They have considered that.
Fried, you mentioned, just to double back on the Habs for a second, you mentioned a meeting next week with Habs hierarchy. Is that a Jeff Molson-ish type meeting? And how do we anticipate that meeting going? Like, what would the message be in it?
I don't necessarily think that's the case with Jeff Molson. I think that next week's their bye week, and I think they always plan to get together. All these teams have their scouting meetings for both amateur and professional at this time of year. I think it's a good time for the Canadians with the break in the schedule to reset and kind of consider what they're going to do. And what do I expect? You know, I think that what I really expect is, you know, I think they'll see where they are and whether or not they really have a legitimate chance to get to the playoffs this year. I think they'll also decide, if they don't, who they might be willing to move. I think the problem is, if you trade too many guys with term, you may weaken yourself for next year too. And I don't think they want to say, okay, just because we're writing off this year, we're going to write off next year also. So, you know, guys like Tatar, guys like Petrie, they're going to have to make some decisions on them. I think the most interesting one is Petrie. I think he's a talented guy. He's had a pretty good year. He's a right-hand shot defenseman. He's signed for one more season. Toronto got a pretty decent LA got a pretty decent package from Toronto for Jake Muzzin, an AHL player, a junior prospect, and a first-rounder for a guy with another year under contract. Muzzin's a lefty. Petrie's a righty. I think Montreal will have to make a big decision on Petrie next year. He's going to be 33 years old. What kind of term do you give him? I think they like him as a player, but I wouldn't be surprised that if they, you know, consider the possibility of seeing, okay, what could we at least get for him if we put him out there? But you're not as strong a team next year if you don't have Petrie. So I think they're going to be weighing all those kinds of decisions.
Habs Blackhawks tonight, Scotiabank Wednesday Night Hockey. Pregame show begins in about 15 minutes. Friedge, what should we expect tonight?
You know, we got a couple of really interesting things. Jeff Ward, the coach of the Calgary Flames, there in Toronto to play the Maple Leafs. He'll join us in the pregame. And in the first intermission, Christine Simpson did a piece with Steve Ludzik, who is looking for a transplant right now. And she went with him on a visit to one of his medical appointments. Paul Coffey was there. Apparently, it's quite emotional. I haven't seen it yet. But Christine did a great piece last weekend with the Thompsons. And I'm looking forward to seeing this one because I hear it's pretty good.
Old friend of ours, Steve Ludzik, if you can help out too, you can go to my Twitter account. I've tweeted it out a couple times. I know Free just retweeted it as well. He was always a welcome member of our team.
Oh, yeah.
Good man.
Friedge, thanks for doing this.
All right, guys. Have a good night.
You too. There is Elliot Friedman of Hockey Night in Canada and Scotiabank Wednesday Night Hockey. I will be tuned in for that tonight.
When you and I were at the Score Television Network with Coolius and everyone, and Ludzie was part of the team.
Yeah.
He was phenomenal.
Just a stand-up guy.
And the experience. He'd been there, done that in various roles in the National Hockey League. And he would, like, I'm a young broadcaster. You're a young broadcaster. I had questions. You had questions. He'd always be there.
Yeah.
During shifts, after shifts, like, just kind of going out for a couple.
And a
like,
real human being.
Real
right?
human being. Like, when people a really say, nice man.
You know when people use the term salt of the earth?
Yeah. Which is overused. That term's overused.
You think so?
Yeah, but not for Ludzie.
Not for Ludzie.
Ludzie was there for you every time you needed him. And I encourage everyone to watch that Christine piece tonight.
Right.
Scotiabank.
And if you can help out.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely, Tim.
With anyone in those situations, not just Steve Ludzik. We'll take the break. We'll come back with what we missed and wrap up another edition of Tim and Sid, Coast to Coast to Coast on Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Send us all your money. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher, and we'll send you a free subscription for Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Absolutely free.
Welcome back to Tim and Sid on both TV and radio. As we always close out the show, it's time for...
What?
I don't know if we actually missed this one because it only came down about 7 minutes ago. Nick Nurse, through Eric Smith, says he hasn't confirmed his starters yet. Guarantees Lowry, Siakam, and Ibaka will start. Says likely OG. One spot in flux. Would you start both Ibaka and Mark Gasol? Nurse said that he wanted to give Serge the start in his old stomping ground here in OKC. Are you excited to see the Raptors kind of sort of get healthy?
Yes, because they've been good. Mm-hmm. The numbers suggest they've been good. Get them all healthy. Figure out what you got. I think Masai Ujiri and Bobby Webster need to know some truths quickly, because February 7th, that trade deadline is around the corner. And you got to see everyone together and get a good gauge of what you have, what you don't have. For Masai and Bobby Webster, this is the most important stretch of the season.
Speaking of health, shocking news from the NFL yesterday. To some, Panthers linebacker Luke Kuechly announced his retirement last night. 28-year-old walks away after 8 seasons, 7 of them as a Pro Bowler.
Crazy.
Here's some of the message that he sent out last night in announcing his decision.
I've been fortunate enough to have the opportunity to play
this game since I was in fourth grade, and I've been with the Panthers now for 8 years, and it's never the right time to step away, but now is the right time for me, and it's a tough decision. I've thought about it a lot, and I think now is the right chance for me to move on, and it makes me sad because I love playing this game. I've played it since I was a little kid, and it's my favorite thing in the world to do, and the memories I have from this place and this organization and playing on the field with these guys, they'll never go away.
The visions of him walking out the field crying will stick with me for a long time. Do you think we'll continue to see more players in the NFL retiring at the ages of 28, 27?
I think so. I think so. I think what you heard in that whole statement, I encourage people to watch and listen to it, and we'll throw it up on the socials maybe. It's about 3 minutes in length, and he had to stop numerous times to compose himself. This is clearly a young man who didn't want to do this. This is clearly a young man who did have a choice. Mm-hmm. He probably could have tried, but this is also a young man who's taking a lot more information than players used to have 20, 25 years ago, yeah, and saying, I can't risk what is around the corner potentially if I get dinged up a few more times. So I think you're going to see more of it. I think information is power in decisions like this, but I feel for him because he clearly didn't want to leave. He's a 7-time Pro Bowler in 8 years. Think about that. Walking away. That's wild, but that's reality right now in the NFL for some people.
Two more stories that I want to pass along to you from the NFL. Larry Fitzgerald is not walking away.
He will play till he's 50.
He's coming back for a 17th season, and the Giants interviewed Jason Garrett for their offensive coordinator job today. Which of those would you rather talk about?
Jason Garrett.
Is that real?
I'd rather talk about Jason Garrett.
Or is that the Giants attempting to procure as much information from the former Cowboys head coach? Because if I were the Giants, I would do that. I would bring in coaches from teams that are in my division, talk to them, pick the brain, even if I'm going nowhere near them.
Do you feel you need state secrets on a team that went 8-8?
Yes.
Or 9-7, whatever it was. Like, yeah. Is that how bad the Giants are? It was like, we need to Trojan horse these guys. Bring in Jason Garrett.
Bill Belichick was taping the Cincinnati Bengals, homie.
That's a valid point. Valid point. But, yeah. Hey, Belichick had nothing to do with that.
No, sorry. That was just do your job, Belichick, series. Nothing to do with that.
He cheated before. Allegedly, and got fined a lot, but not, listen.
Not me. I'm not that guy. I didn't see that.
He's not on to Cincinnati on that one.
Gord sent us a tweet, and I'd love to include.
Gord Stellick?
No, just Gord on Twitter sent us a tweet short time ago, and I'd love to start including the tweets in our questions on what we missed. So he asked, do you think there should be a hearing with the player's safety over Rask getting a shot, he says, punched in the back of the head and is now out with a concussion?
I didn't like that moment last night. I thought the player in question had a choice whether or not to elbow Tuukka Rask in the head or not, and he decided to do it. I thought a hearing was completely warranted on this. Tuukka Rask is one of the best goaltenders in hockey. Not that Halak won't keep him in it. They're still probably going to win the Atlantic. But I think
they haven't been playing that well.
No, they haven't. But this Boston team, here's what I know about them. They find a way sometimes.
Right. And they play bad. They play better. So Emil Bengtsson is the guy who did it. And he did it on purpose, right?
1,000%.
We need to tweet out the video so everyone can see it. But he gets a little shot. I believe it was Brandon Carlo in front.
Yeah.
Gave him a little shot in the back. And he just swiped his elbow through the crease. And this is the bleep that you need out of the game.
That's cheap.
This, man, to me, is way cheaper than anything Tkachuk or Cassian did in any of the stuff that they did. And the Department of Player Safety continues to play the results, and I don't know why they're not playing the results on this, because that's cheap as hell.
But that makes no sense to me. That is a result.
I know.
You have to play that result. That's one of the best goaltenders in hockey. That team was a win away from winning the Stanley Cup last season.
Did he get a penalty on the play? No penalty minutes.
No penalty?
No penalty.
Why
minutes.
Would he get a penalty?
Right.
Elbow to the head, that was unnecessary. One of the best goalies in hockey leaves. Go on with your evening, friend. Go ahead. Have a good game. Enjoy it.
I'm going to move on to OBJ. And after the national championship game on Monday, a video surfaced of Odell Beckham Jr., for those who don't know who OBJ is, handing money to LSU players. After the game, LSU officials said it was, quote, fake money. Joe Burrow.
What a line.
The quarterback of the team was asked about it, and he said, and I quote, "I'm not a student athlete anymore, so I can say, yeah, it was real." Is this a big deal?
Yes. Just, again, Odell Beckham Jr. is on a field and in a dressing room. This continued for like 30 minutes, giving out money to some players who are not declaring, to some players who still are technically student athletes going into an SEC football year next season.
Mm-hmm.
So LSU, they released a statement today saying, "We thought it was fake, but now we're going to investigate it." They need to smooth this over with the NCAA immediately, because that team is still probably going to be strong enough to contend in that conference, and they don't need this. They don't need losing players because Odell Beckham Jr. is a self-destructive idiot.
I can't, like, I want to defend that comment, and after all I saw, I can't. Like, you just jeopardize kids' eligibility
recklessly
in the SEC
recklessly
by handing out a couple hundred bucks to go viral.
To get some likes. That's what that was about.
Exactly. All right, time for us to say goodbye. Up next on Sportsnet, Hockey Central will get you set for the Blackhawks and the Canadiens on Scotiabank Wednesday Night Hockey. And we've also got a NBA doubleheader on Sportsnet 1. It is the, did you hear that? Nets and Sixers, followed by the Blazers and the Rockets. Sportsnet tonight is coming up on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Thanks for watching and listening, everybody.
Fake.